The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
The News Round on Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
Good evening and welcome along to Wednesday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you till 10 o'clock tonight. Coming up, we're going to be speaking to John Duggan, who is at Cheltenham from 7:30. There's been success for Willie Mullins and there has been beef between the jockeys at Cheltenham today. A very dramatic day too at the festival. From 8 o'clock, Brian O'Driscoll is going to join us in studio to look ahead to Super Saturday in the Six Nations. And then between 9 and 10, as always, the football show is coming your way. Karen Duggan will be with us in studio for the evening to watch the Champions League action unfold. And we're also going to get David Ford up on the line to talk about the plight of the goalkeeper in the wake of what happened to Kinski last night for Tottenham Hotspur. Our number is 0879 180 180. If you want to send us a WhatsApp message, we have two of Sligo's finest here in studio. Cal Mullany is in studio. Hello, Cal.
Hey, lads.
Arthur O'Dea is also here. Hey, Arthur.
That's crack.
Do you guys know each other? I mean, is this like a sort of Sligo? Or have you guys been on air together before? Or what's the...
Yeah, we've done it all.
Good one.
You've exchanged pleasantries and all that before.
Yeah.
Arthur, yeah. Good to have you both here. An hour on the clock here in this game that we're watching between Bayer Leverkusen and Arsenal. It was nil all at half time. Richard Dunn on Virgin Media said, "It's terrible what Arsenal are doing. They may have won this competition in June. They may well win this competition in June, but no one will know because we're all asleep." Damien Delaney said Bukayo Saka is suffering. And then it got a hell of a lot worse because they conceded within a couple of minutes of the restart. There was a big chance for Bayer Leverkusen, which they actually nearly missed on Virgin. The scoreboard hadn't even come back up in the top left of the screen and really went over a couple of seconds late. They just about caught that. David Raya made an amazing save. And then from that subsequent corner, Bayer Leverkusen scored. It was Andrić, the centre-back, who scored. So set-piece FC tonight seems to be Bayer Leverkusen, as I say, just over an hour on the clock. And as the comments from the pundits would suggest, this has been a really, really poor evening from Arsenal. I don't know how this now works for them. Are they the sort of team that 1-0 down, they tend to come out of their shells a little bit more because they seem to remain in their shells whenever they're 1-0 up?
Yeah. I don't know. I think an awful lot of the criticism is a bit overblown. I think it's a lot of self-fulfilling prophecy at this stage. Arsenal are on, it must be crap. And then it's up to them almost to do something spectacular to shake that narrative. Whereas, I don't know if last night's game, like we were watching here at the same time, Liverpool Galatasaray last night, that was no cracker and it was no amazing performance for Liverpool. But I don't think they get tarred with quite the same brush as Arsenal do, almost irrespective of what happens. Like, if they lose tonight, it'll be seen as some big kind of, this is it. This is where, you see, they can't do it. They can't do it in Europe. They can't mix up. Whereas, like, it's reality. It's not. It's perfectly fine what's happening here. It's a two-legged affair.
Is the situation not that this is the final form of Arsenal and this is them at their peak or close to their peak, whereas this Liverpool team is having an off-season and there's some sort of acceptance for that?
I don't know. Like, Well,
Liverpool are kind of playing a similar sort of way insofar as they've changed a little bit from that high-octane style that they had under Klopp to more possession-based under Slot. And that probably makes them a little bit more like Arsenal in terms of the games are not as exciting or, you know, it's... I think Richard Dunn's criticism at halftime was very accurate because Arsenal just... They didn't really do anything in that first half. They didn't show any kind of adventure or ambition to really... you know, take control of that tie at all. And Liverpool have probably fallen into that this year as well under Slot, where they've just kept a lot of possession, but they haven't really done a whole lot with it. And it's not great to watch for either of them. But probably the fact that Liverpool aren't getting as much criticism, they're not top of the league. Arsenal have got there playing stuff that hasn't been terribly exciting all the way through.
Yeah, this is what Arsenal want to do, whereas it feels that Liverpool are just... having a bit of a moment. It's a season-long moment, but it's not a good place that they're in. And I don't think it's necessarily where Slot wants his team to be, in maybe in terms of style.
I'm always interested, though, in the dynamics of this thing. Like, the same thing with, you know, like, I suppose, Gaelic football in the noughties. And obviously, it got so kind of that, like, if you want to, I suppose, the main agenda setters being the the three Sunday game panellists, like they had the biggest platform then to kind of set the tone. And that became the tone, like that these teams, Armagh, Tyrone, these are terrible teams to watch. These are killing football. And that all then kind of gets latched onto. I suppose subsequently what does happen is like football does end up in a pretty dark place. But it's not, you know, the hyperbole at that time and all that. Everyone couldn't jump quick enough to say how bad this was. And this is an offence to Gaelic games, everything else. And I just feel there's a little bit of that. Like that, oh, if they win the Champions League in June, no one will know because they're awake or they're asleep. It's like, right, so like, you know, tell us all about last year's Champions League. Tell us all about, like, what you remember from the different teams that got it. I'm not explaining it to the best degree, but I just think there's a degree here where it's like, with a lot of analysis, it's almost always what's the easiest storyline here? Right, let's pound it. Let's go further with it again. Let's keep going with it. Let's just keep hammering this. And I'm not saying that's a concerted effort to slag off Arsenal, but I just feel at this stage it's kind of like it jumped the shark a wee bit. They're not that bad to watch. Like, they're just not. They're like, it's not great, but they're not. It's not peak like watching PSG or whoever last year. Granted, it's not that, but it's not also like, it's not terrible football. Like, it's just not. I don't know. Like, maybe I'm alone in that. Like, but I don't find it like.
Well, the ultimate judge of how they're doing is they're still in the race for how many trophies right now.
Yeah,
it's effective. Yeah.
Patrick has been sort of saying getting knocked out of Europe might not be the worst thing for Arsenal, which I wouldn't necessarily agree with. I think there's a case to be made that Arsenal are. Like, I agree with you on your point about the sort of the movement around the criticism of Arsenal, and this is very much in vogue right now to say that this is bad for football. But I actually think that one of the big points that's been missed is that in the trajectory of how attractive or otherwise Arsenal are, like, I think they might have plateaued or come back a little bit in terms of how they are as a team to watch if you're a neutral. Like, you talk about the Champions League last season. And one of the highlights of that last year was the way in which Arsenal played against Real Madrid. Now, ironically, it was a couple of dead balls that stick out from those games against Real Madrid, the Declan Rice free kicks. But the way in which Arsenal approached those games outside of those dead balls, I thought was really, really good. And then what the Champions League brought last season was two phenomenally attractive teams in Paris Saint-Germain and Barcelona. And obviously we didn't get that final. Inter Milan got past Barcelona in the semi-final. And if you're comparing that, this sort of imagined fixture of PSG versus Barcelona, which unfortunately we never got last year, versus, say, this Arsenal team winning the Champions League this year, then you can see the point that Dunn is making about, you know, where European football has gone in the space of 12 months.
Kind of, but like that final did finish 5-0, right? And you can look at that and kind of go like, that is an event, right? And it's spectacular in a sense. But I wouldn't necessarily say that's great for football. If you know what I mean, like it was a great night. It was amazing to watch, and you know, this PSG team was electric, incredible. But like, it wasn't.
Would it have been a better final if Arsenal had beaten PSG to get to the final, and then had snuck by Inter Milan with set piece to win 1-0 because there was tension ratcheted up all throughout the 90 minutes?
You'd rather have tension than a cakewalk, like.
I would.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know what it is. I'm not sure what this ideal we hold football to, where it's like, because it's completely subjective. Arsenal fans don't care what's happening now, and in the same way, like with Ireland when we were in Czechia or whatever, like that. We have no concern whatsoever with how we go about winning that game.
Absolutely not.
Zero. So it's completely subjective. So this idea that like football has to be played a certain way or whatever, like it kind of depends.
Is there a greater burden of responsibility on the team that are leading the Premier League?
No.
And the Champions? Sorry, not so much in terms of how they should behave, but in terms of the discourse around them. Like, as in you look at them as the North Star of where football is at. The leaders of the Premier League, or maybe the leaders of La Liga, and the best team in the Champions League. The way that team is playing football is probably a sign of where football is at in general. And Arsenal have topped the Champions League, topped the Premier League, and therefore people are extrapolating this point that this is the way football is headed. The way Arsenal are playing football is the way football in general is headed.
That's interesting. That's an interesting theory.
It's cyclical though, isn't it? It's going to come back to another,
definitely.
Again in 5 years' time. And if you look at where Arsenal are at, say a couple of seasons ago, Arsenal would have been very focused on set pieces more than other teams in the Premier League. Virtually every team is like that now. So teams have kind of come around to the way that Arsenal have approached it in the last few years. And data maybe is playing such a key part now in football, isn't it? And people are looking at, you know, what's the most effective way to go about your business? And maybe Arsenal had figured it out a little bit earlier than everybody else. So they've played like that maybe for a little while longer than everybody else. But like, who cares? If you're an Arsenal fan, you're top of the Premier League, you're in the Champions League.
Could be the best season ever.
Absolutely.
It's just crazy. It'll be so funny if they were to go on and win the quadruple.
It really would.
And like, you know, break ground that like really and truly shouldn't even be considered. Like a crazy thing to do.
For example, does anyone think about how United played in 1999?
No, of course.
In terms of their styles. It's just in the books that they completed the treble, so I don't think...
But I always think these things are slightly kind of disingenuous insofar as like people think back, those Liverpool City seasons. Like those Liverpool City seasons, they were amazing. Some of the football was amazing, right? But it also like, it's not like it was a widespread celebration at the time that everyone loved this. And it was like, geez, this is class. Everyone's kind of joined it. Like I feel like the bonds and the biases become a bit more diffuse with time where it's like you can look back at it fondly. But even this now, like it's... I think we have a habit of doing that. We just have of over-exaggerating those things that it's not great now. But as you're saying, like it wasn't, what are the halcyon days for this? Like the noughties and stuff, and you'd Chelsea win the league with 95 points, like a crazy total at the time in 05. And you're like, it was a pretty dug-in style of play. But they had, I tell you what it comes down to. If Miguel Arteta had the charisma of Jose Mourinho, or could sell the project to the public a bit better, I don't think we'd be in this spot. I think it comes down to his lack of, he doesn't fulfil that. He doesn't have that, I don't know,
he doesn't have the riz. Doesn't have the aura. Imagine though, the world might actually end if Arsenal win all four trophies and Mikel Arteta is sitting there with all four around him. The entire pundit class would spontaneously combust, I suspect. Because it's far from just Richard Dunn. Dylan's been in touch. It is terrible football. Been to the Emirates several times this season. Arsenal fan then? They are shy to watch. LOI matches far more enjoyable. Arteta has sacrificed style of play for potential success, but if no success, people surely won't put up with it. Unbelievable squad being wasted if no trophies delivered. I think he's right on the fact that Arteta now has a higher bar. He absolutely has to win one of the two major trophies this season, I think, for this season to be considered a success. And if it's not a success, I think there will be knives out for Mikel Arteta from the fans. Carl, let's get to some stories. You are starting with the Champions League tonight.
Yeah, and let's just update that score. We've now played 72 minutes there. Still Bayer Leverkusen 1, Arsenal in their last 16 tie. Leverkusen, as you say, owned, scoring just after half-time through a header from a corner from Robert Andrich. Three games underway from 8. Bodo Glimt, Hull's Sporting, PSG are up against Chelsea in Paris, and then Real Madrid entertain Manchester City. Some of the team lineups are in City, lining out as follows against Madrid this evening. Donnarumma in goal, Kucinov, Ruben Dias, Gehi and O'Reilly across the back four, Rodri and Bernardo Silva in front of them. Then it's Savinho, Semenyo and Doku with Haaland up front for City tonight. And then the Chelsea team in as well. They take on PSG, Jorgensen in goal, Gusto, Fofana, Shalaba and Cucurella across the back four, James and Caicedo in front of them, Palmer, Enzo Fernandez and Pedro Neto. And then up front, João Pedro is the formation that UEFA have sent out.
Right then, let's talk about Tottenham last night.
Yeah, Tottenham and their manager Igor Tudor insisting his decision to start Antonin Kinski in goal last night against Atletico was the right decision. The 22-year-old was handed a starting role at the Metropolitano but made two high-profile errors early on, leading to goals early in their 5-2 defeat. He was substituted after just 70 minutes, but Tudor says he has no regrets about his team selection.
I'm coaching 15 years, I never do like this thing. It was necessary to preserve the guy, preserve the team. Incredible situation, nothing to comment. You see, it was before the game right choice to do in the moment like we are, with pressure on Vicario, another competition. Tony's very good goalkeeper, so it was for me right decision.
We'll be talking to David Ford a little bit later on this. I don't know. It was a bad decision to start this guy in the first place. You realise that you've made a mistake in game. You reverse your decision.
Exactly. That surely says that there was the wrong decision if you're taking someone off after 70 minutes, surely.
Yeah, I think it takes a big manager to realise the error of his ways and to overturn it, though, especially when you're a manager who has been under the cosh ever since you've set foot in North London. The guy's doomed. I mean, well, I don't
Which
know what... Igor Tudor.
Okay.
I don't know what we're hearing today in terms of his future, Carl, but you'd be surprised if he gets Another game?
Yeah, there were some reports emerging today about whether he would attend the pre-match press conference ahead of their game against Liverpool at the weekend, but he will, is the word from Tottenham. So that would suggest that he will be in charge at the weekend at the very least.
Now then, we did an item last night on the show around Iran and kind of exploring the possibility of them either being kicked out or them not participating at this year's World Cup. And we've got clarity on that today.
Yeah, Iran Sports Minister Ahmed Danyamali has stated his nation won't take part in this summer's World Cup in the US, Canada and Mexico. That's after the joint United States-Israeli attacks which killed the country's supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. Iran are due to face New Zealand and Belgium in Los Angeles in June, and then they play Egypt in the same month in Seattle in their group stage matches. Danyamali's statement came after the FIFA boss Gianni Infantino claimed the US President Donald Trump assured him that the Iranian team would be welcome to compete in this summer's tournament.
Yeah, so kind of exploring this over the last 24 hours or so, it's kind of hard to know what we were thinking would actually happen here. Our item last night, kind of the conclusion on that was that there would be widespread protests at the games. There'd be a lot of Iranian people who've either are first generation, second generation people who have migrated to the United States, particularly when it comes to that fixture in Seattle, that there would be a lot of protests around that, and potentially those protests would have been used by the US regime, by the Israeli regime, to say, listen, look at all these people celebrating an Iran that we are trying to liberate right now, that this false dichotomy being presented to the public. So maybe that influences this decision from the sports minister in Iran just as much as the idea around safety and the logistics of getting footballers into the United States.
Yeah. Yeah, it's impossible. I suppose that doesn't become a tool of propaganda, wittingly or otherwise. But it's incredibly, if it goes that way, it's incredibly sad. It's incredibly sad for those players involved more than anyone else. And for those, as we kind of discovered last night, I suppose, talking to Dr. Fazzouni, that like I completely not appreciated quite how significant a role football played in Iranian society. Like that it is so important for both the men's and women's side that something like this, I suppose you can only imagine it from your own perspective, but like it's a difficult thing to do, but I don't think we could even entertain that notion here. You couldn't imagine it. You couldn't imagine not being able to participate. Like it's not like, it's incredibly difficult. And it's, look, but the reality of this comes back to, I think what the precedent that's been set by FIFA with regards to this World Cup particularly and the relationship with Donald Trump, that it's just, it's made them seem incapable of kind of holding an impartial role in this and seeming like fair brokers and trying to make, in allowing even the facade of sport to transcend the political, which is whereas now it's just like, you know, the Peace Prize and whatnot, that it's nonsense. You'd have no faith in them to help along with that.
We should say it is just the sports minister saying this is not conclusive that Iran won't take part this summer, but that is the view of the government there. Let's move on to the racing. As I say, John Duggan will be with us in around 10 minutes time, Carl, but plenty of drama at Cheltenham.
Yeah, busy day again at the Cheltenham Festival. Owner Willie Mullins enjoyed another major victory on day two of the festival, with Il Ede Tom taking the honours in the champion chase. Paul Townend was on board the 8-year-old and enjoyed a comprehensive success in a race where the pre-race favourite Majbra finished in seventh. Mullins also claimed two wins earlier in the day, with King Rascal Grey the winner of the Novices Hurdle, while Kitzbull won the Novices Chase. The Gavin Cromwell trained Final Orders took victory in the cross-country chase, while Noel Mead and Colin Keane combined to win the champion bumper with the Mourne Rambler. In today's other races, Martator was the winner of the Grand Annual Chase, while Jinko Blue won the Coral Cup. You mentioned controversy, Owen, as well. There was some attached to the start of the opening race of the day, the Novices Hurdle. That opening race started a few minutes later than advertised after efforts to get all 21 runners into a suitable order at the start. Nico de Boinville and Declan Queeley clashed then as they fought for position close to the tapes. After the race then, the jockeys making their way in, and Declan Queeley and Nico de Boinville both stopped to speak with ITV about the race, and Queeley, who was on board I'll Sort That, had some choice words for de Boinville, who finished second with Act of Innocence. They were both speaking with Matt Chapman of ITV.
Yeah, he ran well. The start was a bit of a mess. Got tracked back further than I wanted.
Quickly on those starts, how frustrating is it for you jockeys?
Being abused by an English rider, Nico de Boinville, not very nice. I'm an amateur. I'm coming over here riding in front of my kids and horrific.
Nico de Bonville, second on Act of Innocence. Nico, you'll be pleased, yeah?
Yeah, very happy.
Frustrated?
Bit frustrated. A few things went against us, but happy in the mood.
Yeah. Declan Quealy just said the start was a bit iffy. Did you feel it was a bit iffy?
Maybe he should look in the mirror.
Yeah, this was discussed on ITV shortly afterwards. AP McCoy, Ruby Walsh, both very good on this. Ruby Walsh, his conclusion was that maybe de Bonville should look in the mirror himself after his behaviour, that they're both as entitled to be jockeying for position where they were. It does open up a can of worms with regards to the starts at Cheltenham and in National Hunt Racing in general. Although I did find it interesting, just doing a bit of digging into this, that de Bonville had been on the record about this before the festival. So on Cheltenham Festival starts in the Racing Post, he said, "We're racing all the time and we're trying to protect the sport. The problem is an amalgamation of some of the Irish lads coming in and the amateurs who, and there is no other way of putting it, just don't care." So there's been this sense of there being maybe a cultural difference in terms of how the starts are approached at Cheltenham, and it's going to be something that we'll explore with John Duggan this evening, that there's been reports since then that there's been accusations of racism in the middle of all of this as well, from Queeley's standpoint towards the Boinville. So that process is currently playing out at the moment on the Cheltenham race at the Cheltenham race course. So that's a developing story this evening. As I say, John will provide us with some clarity this evening in about 5 to 10 minutes. We are turning our attention to the rugby.
Yeah, the Ireland coach Andrew Goodman feels Scotland have earned the right to be confident ahead of Saturday's Six Nations meeting between the sides. The Scottish winger Darcy Graham claimed earlier this week that Ireland are there for the taking in the game that will take place at the Aviva Stadium at the weekend. Saturday's clash is a triple crown decider, and Goodman feels the visitors are coming into the game in fine form.
They've earned the right to be confident from the way they played, to put 50 points on a French team that were flying high and everyone was saying is unbeatable in this competition. They've earned the right to have confidence and belief in their game. So it's our job to make sure they come here and they don't get to play that brand of rugby at our home ground. That's our challenge.
And we then have some fixture news for future international windows.
Yeah, so Ireland set to meet South Africa at the Aviva Stadium on Saturday, November the 21st, as part of the inaugural Nations Championship. That'll be preceded by the visit of Argentina on the 6th of November. That's a Friday. Fiji come to Dublin on November the 14th. Ireland will begin their campaign in July. They've got away matches against Australia in Sydney, and then they're at Eden Park for a meeting with New Zealand. The summer schedule also will feature a meeting with Japan, a venue yet to be confirmed for that match.
Right then, we have some basketball.
Yeah, the Irish women's basketball side in action this evening in their latest Eurobasket qualifier. They're playing away against Luxembourg tonight. They're into the third quarter there now, and Ireland trailing at the moment by 63 points to 51. Ireland ahead of that game were third in the Group A table. They're also set to face Bosnia-Herzegovina in this international window, so they'll be in action there in the coming days.
And then just to finish up, we have some Gaelic games and some golf.
Yeah, that's right. So Letterkenny, O'Donnell Park in Letterkenny has been chosen as the venue for the start of Donegal's Senior Football Championship campaign in Ulster this year. Ballybuffet is out of action due to refurbishment work, but they will play down now at O'Donnell Park in Letterkenny on the 26th of April. And then in golf, the PGA Tour CEO Brian Rolapp says no decisions have been taken or in the future of the tour as discussions continue between all the stakeholders. The Future Competition Committee, which is chaired by Tiger Woods, has been exploring potential changes around six key themes, including promotion and relegation from the PGA Tour. But speaking out of this week's Players' Championship at Sawgrass, Rollup says more information will emerge about their future plans later on this calendar year.
Colin Mullaney, thank you very much for tonight's News Round. Arthur, thank you. Loads still to come over the course of the next hour or so. We're going to have John Duggan live from Cheltenham to bring us up to speed and everything that happens. A great day for Willie Mullins, and he'll go and bring us the latest on that controversy at the race course. Brian O'Driscoll in studio after 8 o'clock, and then Karen Duggan and David Ford joining us on the football show after 9 o'clock. The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect. 50 milligram film-coated tablets contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage, 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.